Earth and Sky.
You can already see that information about matters that we once regarded as private are becoming public, and public not necessarily just to our friends and business associates, but also to anyone who happens to be interested in it.
That was George Whitesides, professor of chemistry and material science at Harvard. You're listening to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science podcast. I'm Jeremy Shear, and I spoke to Whitesides about his participation on a panel of experts who discussed nanotechnology. That panel is being televised as part of a new Fred-friendly seminar series on public television stations in 2008. The televised series title is Nanotechnology, the Power of Small. Most of the issues your group discussed during the Fred-friendly panel had to do with tracking devices and recorders that can monitor people and gather information about people's habits and behaviors. So what does this have to do with nanotechnology?
Nanotechnology comes into these issues in the sense that most electronic devices now and certainly in the future are being made on a scale in which the internal workings, the internal machinery, if you like, is nanometer in scale. By nanometer in scale, I mean perhaps 50 to 100 nanometers in scale. So nanotechnology has already become a reality in microelectronics and is making microelectronic devices smaller and faster and more portable and lower power and easier to use in applications of this sort.
As I understand it, it also has to do with being able to store almost limitless amounts of data.
Yes. Nanotechnology is making the promise of free memory, and by memory I mean computer memory, a reality. It also comes into this story in some other more technical senses of, for example, small devices that could be placed on people for specific tracking purposes. But the primary importance of nanotechnology in this particular area is one in which these will be make the information technology much more accessible and less expensive and more convenient to use.
So one of the hypotheticals that your group discussed involved the case of an older man with Alzheimer's or dementia who gets lost and wanders through the neighborhood. What are the issues raised in proposing to fit this man with some kind of chip or nano sensor that would allow his family or the police to track him and to find him?
The issue in tracking individuals has obviously a broad range of interesting problems associated with civil liberties. I think none of us who are fully sentient and capable of taking care of ourselves, at least we hope, want to be fitted with chips so that we can be tracked, although in fact we use cell phones and other devices which are increasingly amenable to tracking. But the issue with the hypothetical case of someone with Alzheimer's is, first, is it to his good to be fitted so that he can be found and cared for adequately? And second, where does the issue of informed consent come into it? How does someone give informed consent if they don't have the capability of giving informed consent? The same problem obviously comes up with small children, where there are sometimes issues of the same kind. And I think the general sense in this is that in a clearly defined case, this is probably not a bad thing to do. However, there is concern with the slippery slope argument, which is that, well, maybe it's a good thing to do with someone who is not capable of caring for themselves, but who makes the definition of who is capable and who is not capable? So it's a problem in which, in this case, the ethical concerns are real, but acute when they are regarded as first steps towards something that might be a broader application of technology.
Now, another hypothetical involved a young girl getting paid by marketers to wear a bracelet or something that would allow the companies to track her while she's shopping. Does this raise the same issues for you as it does for the man with the chip?
It seems to me quite a different issue in the sense that she is in principle capable of making her own informed choices as to how she would like to trade her privacy for whatever she gets in return from the company. The issue there is a little bit the question of at what point do adolescents become capable of making informed consent, giving informed consent? And again, there is a question of broader application. Suppose the bracelet becomes something which becomes part of general population, or you buy a product and a chip is embedded in the product. But of course, again, we use cell phones, we use other devices which are increasingly capable of tracking us. And in fact, when we sign a credit card check, in principle, that information can be collected and stored and used to know where we were going and what we were doing. So it's not an easy issue, but I'm less uncomfortable there than I am with the man who is involuntarily fitted with a tracking chip.
One of the issues that seemed to come up a lot on your panel is the question of where does this information go? Who's seeing it? How is it being used? Why is that important?
That again is a question that connects to your sense of privacy. If the information is there, even if the information is ostensibly guarded and used only for specific purposes, to what extent do you believe that assurance is really something that you can count on? I happen to fall fairly far personally on the side of valuing privacy and the belief that information about me is mine, not public. But there are people who take the point of view that they have absolutely nothing, that they're not free to share with everyone, and that they're primarily concerned with avoiding acts that are harmful or illegal or terrorist, and that they're perfectly willing to have the government take that information. I don't trust the government that far. I don't want the information about me to be public information for all kinds of reasons. And so it's just a difference of opinion, how you value your privacy versus the good or harm that might come to you as a result of making what was private public.
How real are the scenarios that your group looked at? How concerned should we be that we are being tracked in some manner by the government or other organizations?
I think that the question is, in a sense, less concerned and more aware. I think the scenarios are perfectly real. There's no question that one can use chips that report information. If you want lots of information, they have to be battery powered and carry some bulk with them. But it's not, in principle, a complicated task to do. And you find now that people are implanting chips in pets. So if a pet can be implanted, then people can be implanted. And then the most complicated issue is the issue of what's called in the trade ubiquitous surveillance, meaning you collect all information about everyone in real time all the time. And the issues there are very much not just the question of how do you get this information, but how do you get it into a computer? How do you get it into a computer in a form that's accessible and searchable? Who pays for the enormous amounts of information that need to be stored? Who pays for the collection systems? And this is not a trivial job. So it's not something in which all of us are going to have all kinds of information collected all the time. However, if you go online, you can pay someone a few dollars and find out what your credit rating is. And that credit rating is the result of lots of information that's been collected on you by people, not necessarily with your consent. So I think that kind of extension of information, availability of information to anyone who wants to look at it or is willing to pay for it, is a matter of concern.
That was George Whitesides, a professor of chemistry and material science at Harvard University. This special Clear Voices for Science podcast was produced in cooperation with ICANN Productions and the Fred Friendly Seminars, with funding from the Department of Energy and the National Science Foundation. You'll find more about the televised panel discussions on nanotechnology at www.powerofsmall.org. I'm Jeremy Shear, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science podcast.
We're at earthsky.org.